On Air with JT. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. This is a JT exclusive interview.
What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for listening or watching a brand new episode of On Air with JT. And of course, as you know, my name is Justin Thomas, but you can call me JT. And again, thank you so much for all of your support. I really, really do appreciate it. You can listen to this show exclusively on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and all of my links and platforms are there. You can also watch the full episodes and clips, behind the scenes, exclusive content at my YouTube channel. Just type in On Air with JT. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and everything is right there. And of course, if you are a business owner, a brand, a company, and you're interested in advertising on this podcast, my social media platforms, and my new podcasts that are launching this year, then send me an email. Of course, serious inquiries only. You can email me at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Enjoy the show. Yes, sir.
You are listening to On Air with JT. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. Caution, you are listening to On Air with JT, a fully uncensored, raw, and unfiltered show. JT doesn't give a fuck. You are listening to On Air with JT, pop culture, news, rants, interviews, serious discussions that the mainstream media won't talk about, and so much more. This is On Air with JT. You are listening to On Air with JT.
How's it going, everybody? You are listening to On Air with JT, and I have a very, very exclusive interview with a very talented individual, Sam Hollander. How are you doing today, Sam?
I'm good, JT. How are you, sir?
I'm doing so great, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This really means so much, like I told you prior. Like, this really means a lot.
Thank you. It is so, so sweet of you. And I'm honored to be here. It's awesome.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. You know, I told you, you know, I just bought your book and I, you know, I'm about 20% in. I'm still reading it. But I definitely like skimmed through some parts, you know, a little bit before the interview. And there's definitely some things I would love to talk about. Obviously, you know, you released your book, flopping, you know, 21 hit wonder, flopping my way to the top of the charts, Adventures in Songwriting. And I got to tell you, just from personally, just from being 15-20% into the book so far, and I'll be honest, I'm not like an avid reader, but I do love like books about like music and things like that. And this is, I'm not even just saying this because, you know, it's you. Like, honestly, this is one of the best music books that I've ever came across. And I'm not even, you know.
Hey, man, thank you so much. Look, you know, one thing I take tremendous pride in the book is There were no co-writers or ghostwriters. And that's one thing that's always, you know, I'm also a huge fan of a music bio and, you know, a television bio, film bio, any of it. I you know, I'm a nerd, so I love all this stuff and I read it copious amounts of sort of content. And the one thing I realized through the years is a lot of books that I read felt like sanitized takes on the people, you know, and sometimes if I knew the person writing it and it didn't feel like their voice, I can sort of see through it. And I just wanted this one, you know, I wanted to write something purely from my perspective, my take on it. And I had it was a 7-year undertaking, you know, it was 5 years before I even got a book deal. I'm sorry, by the way, how loud are my dogs barking right now? Is it the craziest thing you've ever heard?
It could be worse. It's not a big deal.
All right. We're going to move away from these guys. Hold on one second as I talk to you.
No worries at all.
But you know, they're both getting voted off the island. This is Survivor and I'm extinguishing torches. But, you know, the thing about, the thing about the book was that, you know, what spurred it, I lost both my parents. And when you deal with something like that and you come from a very small family, you know, it really hits you like a shovel to the head. And the one thing I realized was, both of my parents were so interesting and had these fascinating lives, sort of been lost to the internet. Had sort of been lost to the internet by some, to some respect. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I'm a dad, and my kid is in high school, and I just felt that she never got to know her mother. Her grandmother. She never got to know her grandmother, and barely knew her grandfather. And I wanted to connect some of the dots for her, and that's what it started. Where I felt like, you know, here's a little backstory of how I started, also what spurred on my interest in art, right? What got me going? How did I do this? And more appropriately, how did I fail? Because every time I read a book that sort of harps in success, you know, where it's just so hyper-focused on the success, I get really bummed out because, you know, truthfully, it just, the success is boring to me. The success isn't that fun because it's not even relatable. It's weird. The success is just this weird amorphous thing that happens. What's relatable to people is the struggle and tenacity and the intensity and this sort of, you know, following a dream where the deck is stacked against you.
That person.
And yeah, and that's what I want to write about. So that's what this book is about. It's really about the first 15 years of my career when I failed at a level that nobody has ever seen. And I really just wanted to delve into what it's like to just sort of to consistently miss and have incredible opportunities and blow them and to come out of that on the other side and actually figure out how to write a song.
I think that's an amazing thing, not only just for yourself, but to share to the world. You know, not only does this apply to musicians or people in the entertainment industry or art or whatever, but like it just goes to show you, you know, you can fail for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever it might be. But like, you know, it might take, you know, not, you know, if you ask 100 people, 99 people might say no or reject you, but that one person can change everything, you know, and if you stay in, you know, studying it,
you have to stay in it.
Yeah.
You have to stay in it. You have to stay in it. And you also have to get better. Mm-hmm. And the God's honest truth is there were moments in my life where I thought that I was creating art that was competitive. And in hindsight, it wasn't competitive enough. And I had to just get better and I had to learn and I had to study and I had to constantly shapeshift until I found a path. And I began to sort of live up to the goals that I had sort of I had aspired to, you know. And that's the artist's way. You struggle, and you just keep getting better and better and better. And that's what I did. So
definitely, I totally agree. I honestly, personally feel like the faster you fail and the faster, you know, you make mistakes, and you're able to, if you're able to, you know, intelligently, you know, comprehend and analyze and figure out what went wrong and then go back with that approach, you know, the quicker you fail, you know, the quicker you're going to succeed.
Or at, oh,
least at least the probability will increase.
1,000%. 1,000%.
Yeah.
You know? And look, you know, I, you know, a lot of times songwriting, production, art, is depicted in books. And, you know, there is the struggle chapter because you have to have an arc and a story and everybody's journey. But in the hero's tale, I always find in a lot of books and a lot of stories that, you know, they gloss over this stuff, right? So it's the first 20 pages are always tough. But then, you know, I caught a break and everything magically worked out. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen for me. And so I had my first hit at 35 years of age. And I'd been doing it professionally for the previous 15. So, you know, it takes a minute for some people. And it's just, you just have to be cognizant of that. And I think it's important for people to hear that voice that says, don't worry, you have not run out of time. Your moment has not passed. Definitely. It is just beginning. You're just getting better. You don't know it yet.
In reading your book, you know, I have to ask you, you know, because I hear a lot of, you know, talk and, to me, maybe it comes off, you know, maybe I'm misinterpreting a little bit, but, you know, with a lot about the A&R talk and maybe a little bit of frustration, was it frustration at the system and how it's designed on top of a little bit of that self, or was it just a combination? Or
I think it's a combination thereof. I mean, truthfully, the process, and in general, all the companies, it's shifting so radically. Like in this era of TikTok, you know, the A&R is a completely different role now, right? Yeah. Because they're doing acquisitions based on algorithms, and it's a very different thing. But, you know, look, I don't blame any A&R for passing on me 10,000 times or anything like that. It was part of it, but it could be frustrating. I mean, look, no one really, when you're creating art, you really don't want a gatekeeper for your art, right? You want the path of least resistance. You want your art, you want to birth your art and see it come out. And now you can do that. But when I started out, that didn't exist. You know, you wanted music out there, you had to have a record label. And to have a record label, they had to, you know, you needed, you know, they held all the cards, and a lot of records just didn't make the cut. And I happened to be the one whose records always seemed to be tax write-offs that didn't get released. And that really messes with your head. But the truth be told, you know, I learned from it, and, you know, and I had to just, you know, get better and, you know, just wait for an opportunity where one of my records actually sort of entered the consciousness a little bit, you know. But it is weird. I mean, the first five records, when you're making the first five records I ever got hired to produce, all got shelved. You know, that was crazy. There was no internet. There was no iTunes. There was no Spotify, obviously. Wow. So, you know, these were CDs, physical CDs on major labels. And what happened was they would sign a bunch of acts, and then, you know, some just wouldn't get to see the light of day, and they were always mine. And that really messes with your head, you know? And I'm very blessed to have come out on the other side of it, because, you know, a lot of people I came up with ended up doing other things with their lives. And I get it, because it's just really frustrating and psychotic, you know.
I can only imagine. And that leads me to the next question. When you kind of teamed up and met Jason Mraz, you know, with that, you know, whole bidding war for I'm Yours, you know, what was that like, you know, knowing, you know, because I know that the music industry and musicians and artists and rappers and singers and bands, they're all competitive. But I'm sure the songwriters, you know, that whole aspect of the industry is even more competitive. And the stuff that goes on behind the scenes is probably just insane.
Well, remember, like an artist like Mraz, you know, here's a very talented guy who wrote his biggest hit by himself. So when you have somebody like that and they've done that, they're in a completely different power position, because they want to work, they want to do their own thing, and they've earned it. Yeah. He wrote a song by himself.
He wrote it like 3 or 4 years before it got released, didn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the label didn't hear it at the time, and then eventually it becomes a single, and then it was the biggest song on radio that year.
Yep.
And then suddenly he's, you know, thrust back into co-writing, because co-writing is an essential part of popular music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people aren't psyched about that, you know. Some people want to just make their own music. And I happened to catch him on a day, I think, when he really wasn't that psyched to collaborate. And, you know, that's what that chapter is about. It's like, what do you do? How do you navigate a session where the artist really isn't that psyched to be there? Mm-hmm. And do I blame him? No. Why not? You know, he didn't want to be there. It's okay. There's some days that, you know, people don't want to show up. You know, they're just, their heads aren't in it. It's part of life.
Yeah.
But it messes with your head and you have to navigate on the fly. And that's what I did. And that day I navigated on the fly and I totally choked, you know, and that's what that chapter is about.
Yeah. It's a really remarkable story, to be honest. And
thanks,
so,
man.
So after that, you know, you obviously, linked up with, Pat from Train. And you know, you worked with Save Me San Francisco. So did you write Marry Me or did you?
So Marry Me, co-write it? Yeah. So I, the great thing about Marry Me is, I'm a co-writer of the song Marry Me, and I did nothing. It's one of life's great gifts. So what happened was, me, Pat, and Dave Katz wrote a song called Stay On Me. And Stay On Me was a title that I had that I pushed on Pat, and Pat had become a friend. And I told him, man, this song, it's got to be called Stay On Me. And he said, what does that mean? I said, I don't know. It just sounds great. Mm. And he said, I don't know if I really feel it. I said, no, come on, let's go for it. So we chased Stay On Me together and we wrote the song. And it got thrown out immediately. Wow. And then 6 months later, we got back together. We wrote Save Me San Francisco, the three of us. And that reacted. And then Pat called one day and said, remember Stay On Me? I said, yeah. He said, yeah, I rewrote it. It's called Marry Me now.
Wow.
I said, Marry Me? What is that? And he sent it to me. And it was Stay On Me just as a much better song. You know, a lot of the same melodies, but just completely a much sharper lyric. Yeah. And so I got a free ride on that one. So I make that clear with everybody because it's imperative to understand, like, you know, when somebody carries the load like that, the way Pat did on that one, and you see my name on it, trust me, I did very little. Like that was Pat's baby and he really brought it home. Same as San Francisco was great because that's the three of us in a room. Dave Katz had a riff, like the Stonesy kind of greasy, like bar band riff.
Exactly.
And then me and Pat just started literally trading lines like MCs, where we were just trying to like battle rap, and sort of it was like born out of us just trying to one up each other on each line. And that's why I love that song so much, because it's two cats who were really playing really, really solid ball that day. We were really invested and we were having the time of our lives with these punchlines, and it just connected. And I love that song because it takes me to, like, all these songs are timestamps, right? So they take me to where I was at that exact moment and who I was working with. And I can remember the session always. I can remember the room where I wrote it. I just, you know, and I sometimes can even, you know, I'm blessed to remember where I was in my life, you know, and where my headspace was. So they're like these weird, you know, sonic memories and memory books. And what I love about that is, you know, it's just it emotionally makes it so much more rewarding. When I listen to the Spotify playlist they made or the Apple playlist I made of my stuff, I can sort of go through it. I go to some of the songs that maybe weren't as big, and suddenly I'm reminded of a time and a place and sort of a headspace. And
it's like
magical.
Nostalgia, sort of.
It's magical. Yeah. It's just, you know, man, it's like so great to be able to like look at your life in terms of, you know, it's a diary. It's an oral diary. So I love it.
Exactly. And so another song that you worked on that I actually love and I've had it on my phone since it came out is Waiting for Superman by Daughtry.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yes.
Did you help him write that, or were you?
Yeah, I wrote that with me and Chris Daughtry and Martin Johnson wrote that song.
That second verse is great. And the bridge and just.
Like that song I really dig because we did five songs. We wrote four or five songs together for that album. And Waiting for Superman, I was really psyched. I had that title and that concept. And we got in the room. And once again, there's some really there's some real fun punchlines and some visual stuff, you know, in that. And I agree with you. I dig that second verse too. And we really, you know, we were having a great time. And it was an interesting time for Chris because he had been doing a lot of heavier stuff. You know, his previous album had been a little heavier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we took a gamble on Superman and we thought it was, I was scared that it might be a little too pop leaning. And it's funny because it just keeps connecting and it streams, and it just, it's really lived on as an important part of his catalog. And, you know, it's funny, I've been on this book tour and he came out and performed it at the Nashville date at a club when I was on stage. And it was so cool, man, because it took me back to just sitting in my garage writing that thing with him. And it was just, I don't know.
Wow.
It was awesome.
That's really insane. And I don't mean to keep bringing up all these memories, but just, it's so.
Oh, man, it's fun for me. Yeah. It's fun for me. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Like, just to see that you worked with, you know, Johnny from the Goo Goo Dolls, like, that's so, that must have been so fucking surreal. I mean, he's such a talented writer, you know.
Well, he's one of those people, you know, I've been blessed to work with incredible talents. Johnny's not only an incredible talent, but he's also one of my closest friends. So, there's a duality to it, because it's like, you know, friendships are formed in the process. And I met him within 5 minutes. I knew, oh my God, this guy's like a friend for life, you know, and he's remained, we're so close. And I, so that song is, you know, Miracle Pill is very close to me, because that session was the first time I ever worked with him. And I was like, oh my God, what a beast. And his voicings, his tunings were so cool. He's just doing all this cool stuff. And he's the loveliest guy in the world. So.
Wow, that's great to hear. Because at one point, I mean, they were just killing it. I mean, obviously, Iris, Name, Slide. I mean,
a lot of hits, man.
So many
big
hits.
Big band.
And I have to ask you, you know, as you know, a successful songwriter in the industry, you know, and again, I kind of talked about it a little bit, just with the competitiveness. But like, do you personally feel like you're in competition with other songwriters that, you know, are in the industry?
Yeah, I do. It's funny. I do. It's a business.
It's only
and
natural.
It's part of it. I've gone through spells where, you know, I was more competitive than others. And one thing I would tell you is what's strange about music, and the one thing the one descriptive I would provide for the music business that I don't think people understand, it's one of the most welcoming, like, kind, positive group of people. Mm-hmm. It's strange. It's like, you know, it's this weird high school of credit cards, you know, and it's a bunch of nice people. Yeah. And the truth be told, everybody knows everybody. And even people who I would say I quote unquote competed against on records are my closest friends. I would make a case that actually two or three of my closest friends in the entire industry are people I'm fighting for spots against. And we share information like, hey, that's a great collaborator. Yeah. Hey, stay away from that one. That one is probably torture, you know, yeah. And you have, you know, it's amazing. So, yeah, it is competitive, but in a really lighthearted, you know, warm way, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. That's really good to hear, because like, it's just crazy, just because just so many talented songwriters like you. I mean, people don't give Rob Thomas his flowers like he deserves. Like, you know, Ryan Tedder, obviously. Shout out to Lewis Bell from Boston, representing. You know, he figured out the right formula with Post and everything. But you know, I just appreciate, you know, songwriters, you know. I appreciate music and I love music. I'm a huge music nerd and buff, but I really love, you know, and I'm so fascinated in the songwriting, you know, aspect of it. Maybe just because I started writing poetry when I was in third grade. But so
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But, you know, I'm not a good songwriter or anything, but like, you know,
You don't know that. Maybe you are.
Yeah,
come on, man. Maybe you are.
I mean, who knows? But like, that's you know, I just never took it professionally. So like, I'm always fascinated when I'm able to talk to, you know, people that are songwriters that have actually, you know, done things and actually, you know, have, you know, created amazing work in art. And that's not always an easy thing to do, because I feel like, honestly, Sam, like a lot of people don't understand, like most musicians, bands, rappers, singers, whatever, you know, they dream their whole life to get maybe one song to chart, you know, on the Billboard, you know, top 100 or top 40, you know, at that. And the fact that, you know, you were able to do that over 22 plus times. And like, what's even harder is because you have to be so creative and diverse, because you're writing for someone else's perspective and how they're feeling.
It's 1,000%. I mean, honestly, and look, I got into this when I, you know, the title 21 Hit Wonder is a play on obviously a one hit wonder, right? Yeah. I got into this business as a songwriter. My only dream was to have one hit, because I just wanted to have that feeling, right? That magical feeling of hearing your song, like I said, at the dentist's office, mm-hmm. or hearing it on the radio, or hearing it in a stadium or something cool, you know? I just wanted to have that magical experience of a song living on, right?
Definitely.
And it's dopamine. Once you get a hit of it, you need more and more. It's the most magical feeling once you actually have a song that enters the consciousness. Like the first time Great Escape by Boys Like Girls was playing everywhere I went, it was like this hit. I can't even explain to you the experience. Magical. You know what I mean? Magical. And what happens is you have to replicate it. You want to feel it again and again and again. Uh-huh. But the flip side is, for me at least, the reason why songwriting always appealed to me is because I was a fan of screenwriters. So I grew up, I was really into John Hughes and Albert Brooks and these people in the '80s, you know, and I loved, you know, John Hughes with all his teen angst stuff and Albert Brooks with his humor and his dry digs and all that stuff, you know? And I felt that, I realized very early on that songwriting, doing what I do, where I'm collaborating with other artists, is screenwriting. Right? That's what I'm doing. I'm screenwriting. I'm basically crafting the sequel to whatever they've done. I learned that from the great Nile Rodgers. He taught me that. And I have to say, so it's such an exhilarating thing to wake up in the morning and to work with an artist of any level of success and just say, okay, I want to like take their, you know, alter their journey, the next thing. So Daughtry had done No Surprise or whatever the previous single is. So I thought Waiting for Superman was a massive left turn. And I felt like it was a really interesting pivot in his film, you know, and that's how I approach all these songs. So they're always trying to think a little outside the box and just, you know, what movie would I want to see? And that's how I write it for that artist, you know?
Wow, that's a really good way to look at it. I never really thought about it like that, but wow. That kind of just blew my mind.
Thanks, man.
So you also, you know, worked with Weezer, which is pretty crazy, you know.
That's cool.
I actually interviewed Scott Schreiner a couple
great
weeks
guy
ago. Yeah, he
yeah.
was so genuine and nice, you know, so talented. And I was on Facebook and I was scrolling and I didn't know that Rivers went to Harvard for like a year while he was signed. Like that's just so funny to me. Like
Rivers, hey, Rivers is a
so talented.
I mean, God, yeah, I mean Rivers is brilliant. Rivers on another planet. He's amazing. He's so gifted. He is like, you know, I was a huge Weezer fan. Obviously, I came of age. We're the same age, and I came of age musically. It throughout his career, I've been sort of just basking in it, just watching it, and just always wanted to permeate his world. And I wrote a song with him on one of the records about 6-7 years ago called "I Love the USA," but it wasn't a single. And that was it. And, you know, we wrote the song Records and we wrote it over a year. It took a year of kicking it back and forth. And we finally got it. And it was the, you know, number one song in alternative for the last couple of weeks. And it was the most exciting thing ever. I can say I had a number one alternative hit with Weezer, you know. And, you know, once again, Rivers is a guy I know outside of the business as well, like socially. And he's a great guy. And he's a really sweet guy and very decent guy. And I don't know. Like, once again, it's neat. I look, I'm a fanboy at the front of every session. It's important that people understand I am the colossal fan. I'm a nerd who was allowed to enter the room. So I just come in so excited that, you know, I work with these people. And I think the energy is probably pretty palpable. You know what I mean? Because it's just dripping off of me of like, I have so many ideas and I'm so passionate because I'm working with like, you know, I'm working with the jukebox of my life, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I didn't know, Sam, that when you were working with We the Kings, like I used to watch Charles Trippy's like vlogs back in the day on YouTube.
Yeah.
And like they were so strategic and good at marketing with implementing, you know, promoting the music and everything. And they
dude, I want to tell you something. That's a very, Listen to me, that's one of the most perceptive comments. I want to tell you something. I was discussing this with Steve Grieveberg, president of S-Curve Records, one of the industry's probably sharpest minds. We were discussing this 4 days ago, JT, how ahead of the curve they were with King's Carriage.
Yeah,
they were ahead of the curve.
They were ahead of their time.
They really were. They were pioneers in that thing. And at the time, I didn't really understand it. Now they would be TikTok royalty. So
yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, a great band. I met them. They were DeSoto, and we renamed them and musically shifted in the writing. We shifted the process, and, you know, it was me and Travis and Dave Katz. And, you know, we wrote that first, I guess we did three albums together, but, you know, obviously Check Yes Juliet was the song that sort of got the whole thing moving, and it was magical for all of us. Great song. One of my favorites.
Definitely. It's a really good song. Yeah, I just honestly, again, just to go back, like, I just, they really were ahead of their time with implementing, like, and people really don't give them their credit.
Like, no, I don't, you know, it's weird. It's, you know, I mean, once again, for those who know, we know,
yeah.
But the great thing about We the Kings is they still kill it, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They still kill it, which is great. I mean, they tour incessantly, and they really do have a great core group of fans, and honestly, you know, some of the nicest people, possibly my favorite band that I've worked with in terms of the personalities of all four. I mean, really a lovely group of guys, man, you know, thankful for every moment that they get to do this. And that's refreshing, you know, I've never seen those guys take it for granted for 1 second.
Yeah, they always seemed, at least from, you know, an outsider's perspective, yeah. Just watching them, they always seemed very genuine and like...
Oh, 1,000%. They're lovely.
Definitely.
Really lovely.
So, Sam, you know, obviously, you know, Hand Clap, you know, comes out, you know, that was just massive. And, you know, Panic at the Disco and things really start, you know, obviously throughout the years, you know, there were, you know, ups and downs and... You know, I kind of said on my podcast the other day, you know, I'm very open about my mental health, you know, journey, and I have bipolar, and like just from where I'm currently at in my position in the industry, you know, like the industry is so bipolar. It's like, you know, one minute you're hot, the next second you're cold, like
1,000%, 1,000%,
1 minute you're down, like
1,000%.
Just
you know, it's a very unforgiving business,
yeah.
And I think most jobs are.
Yeah.
So,
and you know that going in.
You do, and honestly, I've always approached it from a marathon perspective, and I always hoped that the body of my work over time would be appreciated. You know, if this was baseball, I would say, you know, I've not had a Derek Jeter career, but I want to believe I've had a Bernie Williams career. You know, it's been lengthy, long, and consistent. And I work really hard. I take it very seriously. And, you know, I'm aware of, you know, some years I'm hotter than others. But even on years where, you know, I might not be the first call, but, you know, I'm still in the mix. I'm just honored to be there. And I just keep, you know, working to get back to, you know, to being on everybody's radar. So
Definitely.
you can't get defeated by it, because none of it's personal, right?
No.
You know, at the end of the day, it is a numbers game. So, you know, you just have to, laugh about all of it, just going to it and say, you know what, I get it. I'm not taking it personally. I'm just going to get better. And I'm going to put myself in a position where I can't get boxed out.
Yeah. And you can kind of, just by your response by that, I can kind of like, see the translation into like High Hopes and like, hey, look, Ma, you know, I made it, like, you know, just kind of those emotions and like, you know, in some aspects of the lyrics in those.
Yeah. Songs. A lot of that stuff touches on, you know, themes of it's aspirational, right? It's aspirational. Some of it self-fulfilling, you know, you know, it's, you know, at the end of the day, I like writing positive themes, maybe to cover up darkness, you know, so but I like the balance and the yin and the yang. So I do try to, you know, and I like writing stuff that, you know, that might bring some joy to people. You know, I don't like writing really dirgy, sad stuff. It's less my scene. I think it's so much, I'm so much happier writing songs that, you know, make people feel, you want people to feel something, and I really want people to feel good, you know.
Definitely.
I think that's just sort of, that's my wiring, and, you know, it makes me, you know, once again, if it brings people joy, then I did something right, you know.
Definitely. But in your book, you know, you said that you couldn't help but feel like the struggle of success was just another fleeting cycle.
Like, well, you can never get too comfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We can never get too comfortable.
It's good to be content, but not complacent.
Yeah, I just think, you know, once again, you wake up one morning, you know, and you believe, you know, if you begin to believe your own hype, it's over.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you have to understand there are so many talented people out there and people who want it as bad as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the second you get complacent and you take your foot off the gas and you say, well, you know, sort of, you know, I've arrived. Someone's going to pull the rug out from underneath you. I really believe that.
Yeah, especially when you have some momentum and you're on fire like that.
1,000%.
A lot of artists, especially younger artists, we see they get too complacent, you know, and they get that fast money's coming in, but like they don't tour as much. They're not working on albums and, you know, I'm sure we can go on for hours about that, but that's a whole
Oh, of
story.
Course. Of course. Of course. And also remember, most people, you know, they had their whole lives to write the first big song,
mm-hmm.
and it's very hard to come with the second, you know, because you're on the clock, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's why a lot of artists become quote unquote one hit wonders, you know,
definitely
fleeting.
So I know, we only have a little bit left of time, but I do want to ask you a few more questions. You know, you worked with another artist that I really love, who I think is another artist, you know, like Rob Thomas, who is so underappreciated and like don't get the recognition they deserve, is Andy Grammer.
I mean, the world's nicest guy.
He seems like he's like, I follow him on Instagram. I've been trying to get, you know, an interview with him for months. But, you know, he seems like he's honestly the nicest, one of the nicest, genuine artists.
It's true. It's not contrived.
Like
it's not contrived.
Not
a facade at all. Not a facade at all.
Yeah.
He is truly that person, and he's been that person since I've met him. I worked on his debut record, and now I, you know, I came full circle, and you know, I worked with him. You know, I wrote "Damn It Feels Good," which was a single at radio a year ago,
yeah.
And so I have worked with him on and off for 13, 14 years, and
wow.
He's still the loveliest guy in the world, you know?
Yeah, that's
so, yeah, no, couldn't embrace him more. What a guy.
Yeah.
You know?
I always love to hear when I speak to people that have worked with people that, you know, who've made an impact on me or influenced me or helped me during, you know, tough times in life, to hear that, you know, they're actually, you know, a good person as well and genuine and, you know, maybe not so, you know, egotistical as some people, you know. So it's always, for me personally, it's always nice to hear, you know, people that, you know, I look up to and are fans of, you know, to hear that they are, you know, really decent human beings, you know, regardless of, you know, what success or money or accolades and fame and all that comes with it, you know, how it can change people. But I do have to ask you, you know, one more artist, you know, you worked with Isaac from The Fray?
I did.
Crazy.
I wrote a song with those guys. This has got to be 8 or 9 years ago now.
Okay.
And it was an interesting song because
was it the Helios project? I don't mean to cut you.
It was the Helios record, yeah.
Wow.
And you know, it's funny. Joe King came to my house, and I love Joe King. He is a talented guy,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it was funny. We sat down to write a song, and you know, we wrote a song called "Same as You." But what was interesting about the song is I heard it as an up-tempo. We were writing it as an up-tempo, and I was really excited about that. Like, it was fast and frenetic, and they produced it out as a ballad. And it's really cool. It was very different from how I heard it, but probably better. It was more emotional, I think, you know, but once again, I'm always trying to push things up tempo, you know?
Yeah. You know, that was a great project. I actually seen them live, when they were on tour for that. And like two songs on that album that are so underrated, like Break Your Plans, Wherever This Goes, like just two amazing.
Yeah. Good
great,
songs.
Great
good
songs.
Songs.
Great songs.
Nice. Also, once again, nice people. There's a theme here, you know, it's like I've been blessed to work with really, really decent people. And I love that, you know?
Yeah, that must be a great feeling. And Sam, like, so 2019 comes around, you win a Billboard Music Award, you're a two-time ASCAP Pop Award winner. Like, how many plaques do you have, Sam? you must have so many plaques in your house.
I have to tell you, I have a lot of plaques. They're in a garage and they're boxed up, but you know, someday I will break them out. I do have I got a lot of plaques. It's neat. I mean, you know, when you grow up and you're such a fan of this, right? And you stand the way I did. I used to stand at newsstands in the city to read Billboard magazine free because I couldn't pay for it. Mm-hmm. And you'd see the gold and platinum presentations of plaques. Mm-hmm. And it was the most magical feeling, right? And you'd see, like, you know, there's a label executive and the artist and maybe the songwriter producer. And you just felt, wow, someday that could be me, mm-hmm. you know? And I could be holding a gold or platinum record, and to have like a lot of them is so cool, man. And it's never lost on me. There isn't a moment where one of these things comes through the door and I think, oh, been there, done that. It's like when I have a song that resonated and people liked enough for it to, you know, be certified, what a feeling, you know what I mean? It's magical. And it's still, I still get like this weird galvanic response up and down my arms when it happens, you know, because it's, you know, we're so blessed to be able to do this. And I hope that doesn't come off like a hack sort of generic answer, but it's the truth. Like, I really do believe, like, I cannot believe I get to do this with my life. Mm. It's all I ever wanted to do. And the fact that some of, you know, these songs actually resonated with people, I don't know, just, I get all emotional when I say it. It's really cool.
Oh,
so.
It does. Like, just, I mean, just even Waiting for Superman is, you know, helped me so much during my, you know, tough times that I've had in life.
I love that.
One of the songs that you've worked on. So Sam, I also have to ask you, you know, how should I word this? So first of all, I didn't know that you were babysitted by Andy Warhol.
I was a little kid. I was babysit by Andy Warhol a few times, because my mom was Andy's life partner was my mom's business partner.
Okay.
They're interior decorators in the city in the 70s. My mom was a single mom, remarried, and just chased this thing and made it happen. And it was, you know, she was this incredible success and just an absolute brilliant, brilliant mind, brilliant eye. And, you know, she would have to drop me off with Andy to buy time. And that's, you know, it goes way back. It's, it's tell you one thing, it sure helped get a book deal, you know, so it was a nice calling card. So, it was pretty neat, but, you know, pretty trippy.
And you don't have to say the artist or song, but was there a song that came across to you that you turned down that ended up becoming like a very massive hit?
Oh man, there's so many songs I missed out on.
Really?
Well, I would say turned down per se, but I would say, you know, I miss things, you know, I miss things. I remember, had an opportunity, you know, to work with 303 early on, and I didn't do it when I should have. Oh, wow. And I thought they were great. But I think the biggest thing I ever missed out on was probably Lana Del Rey. My buddy Jake Ottman was working with her as I believe a publisher, and he brought her demos over, and he said, this is the perfect fit. It's coming out of Gym Class Heroes. This woman is perfect for you. She's the perfect fit for what you do musically and what you love. And I just didn't know how that was going to work at the time at radio, because I was so fixed on, I had finally had radio hits, mm-hmm. and I wanted to keep that going. And I almost let art suffer because of it. And I passed on doing the hang or the meeting. That doesn't mean she would have worked with me, but I had an inside shot. And I turned it down, and then she blew up a year later, and it was a big choke. So I'm still salty about that one.
Yeah, I can only imagine. But you made up for it, to say the least.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
Rick Rubin, what was that like?
Well, I never got to hang with him, but I did get notes. But he single-handedly, he gave me one note on Shake It by Metro Station. He said, please turn all the live instrumentation down and push up the programming and the electronic drums. And it went against my instincts, but I did it because he's Rick Rubin and I'm not. And he was correct. So, you know, he's one of my idols when I was started out. So that was pretty cool. You know, it's just cool to get a note from him, you know.
Definitely. And one thing I want to ask is, you know, at the end of your book, you know, you mentioned and you thanked Casey Kasem, and that caught my attention and eye. And I was wondering if that had to do with, you know, growing up listening to him on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, the countdown was everything for me, because I used to write down all the slots, and I was so into it. Uh-huh. And I just wanted to, I just wanted to give a little shout out, because that was truthfully how it started for me. I loved everything about it, you know?
Yeah.
So
there would be no Ryan Seacrest if it wasn't for him.
No, these guys were pioneers, and that's why I did it, you know? So I don't know. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. So Sam, is there anything that you're currently working on that you can talk about or promote? Is there anything you want to promote?
Well, it's just that, you know, I'm seeing this book through. The thing about this book is, you know, I gave 100% of 100% of the money, the proceeds, to charity. They go to Musicians on Call, which brings music bedside to patients in hospital. It's a charity I'm very passionate about. And so every penny from this book, from my end, goes to this charity. And I've paid my own way to visit 30 universities so far. And by the end of the run, it'll be close to 50. Wow. And I'm just trying to get in front of kids and just, you know, just tell them, that give them a hug and tell them it's going to be all right, and that they can do this too. And if I was able to do it, they can. And just, you know, I don't know. I just want to provide a little bit of encouragement at a time when I think people need it, you know?
Yeah.
So
I love that. I really commend you and have so much respect for you to be so, you know, vulnerable and be able to share your story and show people that, you know, hey, I fucked up so many times. I've had self-doubt. You know, I've, you know, thought I made it, but then, you know, shit hits the fan. Like, it's a crazy, wild journey, but I did it. And you can do it too. You know,
like, it's just so important to, I think it's so important for people to understand that they can, and that there are so many voices of negativity. Like, we block our own shots anyway, right? We're our own worst critics. We get inside of our own heads and talk ourselves out of things. And I think it's imperative to know that, like, you can do it. You can do it. And I want to be that, like, cheerleader voice that says, God, you know, like, suppress your own negativity, suppress any voices around you. I had these artists as parents who cheered for me and told me that I could do this with my life. It was the most magical feeling, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people don't have support networks of people rooting for them and cheering for them. And so I'm hoping to be a one-person cheering squad with my little pom-poms saying, go out and make great art and be happy chasing it. Enjoy every bit of the struggle, all the terrible stuff too, and embrace it, because it can happen. And you can do something that, you know, you can sort of chase and actualize some dreams, like, you know, like you're doing with your podcast as we speak.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I, like I told you, I'm a big believer in the law of attraction and manifesting things. And it's just it's so ironic, the fact that, you know, you co-wrote, you know, High Hopes, and that's literally like the fucking theme song of my life story right now. Like, literally, if there were a film, you know, a documentary, you know, filming me, it would be that song. Like, it's just so ironic, and I'm forever thankful. Sam, I have two quick questions for you. A couple years ago on my podcast, I predicted that that the world is going to see a lot more artists selling their catalogs, and over the next 5 to 10 years. I said this a couple years ago, and we're starting to see this, you know, on a significant basis. And you know, from people that aren't in the industry and not really familiar, they're like, "Well, why are you doing that? You know, why is Justin Bieber selling for $200? Well, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, behind the scenes and all different kinds of factors. But do you agree that we're going to start seeing a significant increase of people, you know, like really popular, successful musicians, bands selling at least half of their catalog or the entire?
Yeah, I think people used to, I think back in the day, people used to, I think people used to hold these annuities forever and then sell them in their later years, in their golden years, you know, retirement. And now people are realizing, wait, I can sell them when I'm young and build another catalog, and then build another catalog.
Exactly.
Yes. You know, and that's what happened with me, at least, is that, you know, I wanted the freedom to create whatever I wanted to create and not stay on a treadmill of work, but to actually pick and choose things, you know?
Definitely.
And that's what brought me the most joy. And I finally, I was able to ascertain it, man. You know what I mean? And when I sold it, you know, look, my name's still on the songs.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
You go to Spotify, I see my name.
Yeah.
So they can't take away my contributions. And to have the freedom to create what I want to create is so empowering. And I think it might make my songs better. Maybe I'll elevate, because maybe,
you will.
You know, there's a freedom in that, you know, it's again, like, there's a different sort of weight on my shoulders. I've removed a monkey from the back from one respect. And then, you know, it fuels the art in another. So
definitely.
I'm very pro catalog sale, but it's based on the person. For me, it was great, you know?
Definitely. And one last question. I kind of came up with this, like, prediction. I want to hear what you honestly think about it. Like, I honestly think, you know, the music industry obviously is constantly evolving and changing, but I think we're going to get to a point with, like, when VR and, like, AI really evolves, you know, like, we're seeing, you know, like, you can get, like, virtual, you know, not like virtual, like live stream to watch, you know, shows and performances and concerts. But I think it'll get to the point where, you know, companies will have, like, VR sets where you can actually have, like, that POV kind of, like, perspective, and you can actually be, like, kind of at the concert, you know, without being there. I think that'll actually, like, come to a point in the music industry. Obviously,
it's going to be a very different industry going forward, yeah. You know, and, you know, AI music is obviously, it's here, and we're within the next year or two, I think you're really going to start seeing it take a hold.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not for me. But I believe that for every reaction, there'll be a counter reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that maybe this will fuel people to write really great organic stuff that goes against it, you know?
Definitely.
And look, maybe there'll be some stuff that comes out of it that's fascinating. I mean, technology's a crazy beast, you know? There have been such amazing technological advancements that have completely moved me in some of my favorite tunes. The flip side is, you know, there's stuff that, you know, bores me to death. So I hope that there's every sort of voice is represented musically, you know? Every different type. And there can be super high tech, strange, you know, AI groups and all this stuff. And, you know, also, like, really organic, tight outfits that can go and play in a room and blow your mind. They're just like the essence of, you know, basic instrumentation.
Definitely. I 100% agree. I just wanted to hear your idea and perspective on that. Of course, anyone that's listening or watching, you can go and check out samhollandersongs.com. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug or promote? Obviously,
just buy this book. Buy this book, because this book is for all of you, in terms of for anybody out there who is hit any creative roadblock or any creative needs that shove. I am that shove. And I don't know. Other than that, I don't know. Just keep doing whatever brings you joy. Be a decent human and have a good time.
Yeah. I totally agree. And Sam, thank you so much. This really means
brother,
a lot. Brother,
thank you so much, man. Great questions, and thank you for your time. And
all
right, and make sure anybody wants to hit me up on Instagram or whatever, if they're listening, I do respond. I'm slow, but I do respond, as JT will tell you. So
yeah, you're a busy man. Where can people follow you? What's your handle?
I think it's Sam Hollander. I mean, I'm usually the guy in the baseball hat and the hoodie, so it's hard to miss me. You know, right. I'm dressed as Oscar Madison from The Odd Couple 24 hours a day, so it's hard to miss me. Yeah.
Sam, thank you so much. I really
thank you, brother.
I wish you, honestly, man, I wish you so much success and happiness this year and obviously in the future.
Dude,
and you're going to kill you, it. You're gonna kill
you
it
too. Listen to me. It's your turn. Now go have some fun. All right, brother?
Thank you.
All right, man. Means a lot. Best of luck.
Thank you, Sam. Have a great day.
All right, buddy. Thank you. You too. Bye.
What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for listening or watching a brand new episode of On Air with JT. And of course, as you know, my name is Justin Thomas, but you can call me JT. And again, thank you so much for all of your support. I really, really do appreciate it. You can listen to this show exclusively on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and all of my links and platforms are there. You can also watch the full episodes and clips, behind the scenes, exclusive content at my YouTube channel. Just type in On Air with JT. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and everything is right there. And of course, if you are a business owner, a brand, a company, and you're interested in advertising on this podcast, my social media platforms, and my new podcasts that are launching this year, then send me an email. Of course, serious inquiries only. You can email me at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Enjoy the show. Yes, sir.
You are listening to On Air with JT. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. Caution, you are listening to On Air with JT, a fully uncensored, raw, and unfiltered show. JT doesn't give a fuck. You are listening to On Air with JT. Pop culture, news, rants, interviews, serious discussions that the mainstream media won't talk about, and so much more. This is On Air with JT. You are listening to On Air with JT. You are listening to On Air with JT. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com.